Health Rising, interview with Courtney Craig. From the lockdowns, family stress, a divorce, immigration problems, and the emotional stress that comes with all that, you've had quite a time of it the last couple of years. Somehow, throughout what must have been one of the most stressful times in your life, MECFS has remained stable. What do you attribute that to? What did you do to build a strong enough base of health to be able to weather these storms without your MECFS going through the roof? As these challenges came up, were there things that you did to keep your MECFS in check? Courtney. I was diagnosed some 25 years ago now. Of course, the condition changes over time and with age. I turned 40 last year. At this point, I can say that at times when my mental health is bad, my MECFS symptoms are not so bad, less fatigue. And times when my MECFS symptoms are severe, my depression is less so or non-existent. I have no explanation for that. I can say the fatigue of depression is very different than the fatigue of MECFS. Perhaps other readers can relate to that as well. For me, the fatigue of depression is an existential paralysis, whereas fatigue of MECFS is, of course, post-exertional malaise, immune response, widespread pain, etc. Health Rising. Could you go more into how the fatigue of depression is different than the fatigue of MECFS? It sounds like you don't experience post-exertional malaise with depression. Courtney. No, I would say I do experience post-exertional malaise when my depressive symptoms are bad. It's just that I'm not very active during those times. I'm not out and about or doing anything mentally strenuous that would trigger post-exertional malaise usually. Depression for me is a paralyzing existential crisis. The fatigue feels different though. The fatigue of depression feels like loss of interest, loss of motivation, loss of hope, loss of spark. Fatigue of MECFS for me is loss of battery life and often widespread pain and weakness. It's utter physical exhaustion, but being mentally wired and unable to sleep. It feels like I've played a 90-minute soccer match without rest. It's a fatigue that's physical versus a mental fatigue, perhaps is a way to put it. I want to emphasize that I wouldn't be where I am today without Dr. Teitelbaum's protocol. That was the catalyst that improved my condition thanks to a whole system approach and a compassionate physician. That was back in 2009, and I've been able to maintain my level of function from that new baseline. I don't like to use words like cure or recovered. I'm neither, but I have a very high level of function that I can maintain. I am able to exercise in the gym 3 to 4 days a week now, but I can't work a 40-hour week, do loads of travel, or go for a jog. I'm super grateful, but humble. Diet has been crucial in that maintenance. A diet that is good for the gut, normalizes blood sugar, and is anti-inflammatory. I also intermittent fast almost daily. The other big factor is LDN, which I continue to take on as an as-needed basis to mitigate post-exertional malaise. Without these, I'd be far less functional and probably unable to work as much as I do. To a lesser degree, I rely on some supplements, but those are targeted and also used as needed. For example, I will use a probiotic when I feel my gut is off. I like to use ATP fuel on days when I need to exert a lot of mental or physical energy. It consistently gives me that boost and makes my legs feel much stronger so I can bike and take my dog on long walks. And then there are some standards for good health that I always take, like a quality multivitamin, fish oils, and bioavailable anti-inflammatories. Health Rising. Your mental health was a challenge, though, and turned to ketamine to support it, and it worked. Ketamine, for a long time used solely as an anesthetic, is a fascinating story that is continuing to evolve. It's been approved to treat treatment-resistant depression and is also used to relieve pain. How did you end up trying ketamine, and what happened? Did you have any advice for people who want to try that route? Courtney, I've had periods of depression off and on since I was 20 years old. Of course, I've tried numerous things over the years, but always pushed through knowing it would pass in time or when my life became less stressful. Multiple rounds of talk therapy I personally never found helpful. I also trialed various antidepressants, but never found them to elevate my mood, and the side effects were impossible. Like any other chronic condition, depression requires a frustrating degree of patience to find any relief. Since most of that psychological treatment was performed in the US, I had zero patients to start from square one here in Germany. I did try for a few months just to see if the approach was different. It wasn't, but quickly lost confidence in those types of solutions. I had read a lot of promising research regarding psychedelics and was intrigued. I even experimented with LSD, which was eye-opening, but didn't have any sustained effect on my depressive symptoms. Whereas LSD's effects are on the serotonin system, ketamine works on the NMDA receptor and has effects on the amygdala. Indeed, it was a totally different experience. I found a private clinic here offering IV ketamine therapy consisting of a 6-treatment protocol. I found it surprisingly affordable. Public insurance will only pay for such things if treatment-resistant depression is well documented, and again, I didn't have patience for that. Truly, as we all know, when you're chronically ill for so long, it doesn't really matter the cost. I'd pay any expense for a life-changing treatment, and ketamine was just that. It completely put my depression in remission, sustained 1 year out. I'm not using any rescue medication or wasn't prescribed the nasal spray alternative for maintenance. If I feel a relapse again, I will go seek additional IV treatments, though may not need another 6. I started at a 30 milligram dose, and each session titrated up to a maximum dose of 100 milligrams by the 6th infusion. It is a very intense therapy. I mean, it's a horse tranquilizer after all. You are awake and conscious, but can't feel your body. You're encouraged to close your eyes and experience where the mind takes you. It is not done in conjunction with talk therapy at such doses, as you also lose the ability to speak. I kept very detailed notes after each session and found it truly fascinating. Psychedelic experiences are sometimes described as ego death, which can be quite frightening. For me, ketamine felt more like an ego unraveling, peeling away the layers of self and cleaning out all the messy bits in between. It was a deeply philosophical experience for me. I paid careful attention to how long it took post-treatment for the depression to return. With increasing doses and more treatments, the effects were more prolonged until by at least treatment 4 or 5. I didn't feel depressive symptoms much at all. My anxiety also improved a lot. I had prior been having very few panic attacks here and there and was triggered by crowds, noise, and the like. I also have a history of PTSD from 10-ish years ago. My sleep wasn't very affected, but probably did improve a bit. My chronic myofascial pain certainly improved, but would wear off quickly between sessions. I didn't experience any episodes of post-exertional malaise during the time, but also tried to not do too much during those 2 to 3 weeks since the treatment is pretty intense. Health Rising. You've been thinking about creating an online nutrition course focused on diet, and now you've done it. And more courses on fasting and how to do it properly. How to manage food sensitivities are on the way. How important was finding a good diet in your ME/CFS journey? Courtney. Before I moved to Germany, I was a teacher. I've always wanted to create nutrition-related educational material. I have now basically transformed the information that commonly arises in my one-to-one consultations and turned it into a concise course. I plan to create a library of courses and, at the moment, won't be doing one-to-one consultations anymore. I'm currently finishing up a course on digestive issues and food sensitivities that are common to post-viral conditions. I also want to dive into supplements to provide some help there, since most of them are ineffective. I do have a day job. I've always had a day job. It's a lot to take on. I'm actually in the middle of a total career change. I'm completing a medical writing program with a focus on continuing medical education. Perhaps I will find an avenue to create CME for doctors on the topics of ME/CFS. Heaven knows we need that. I've taken a lot of online courses myself and found that few keep my attention long enough to finish them. I didn't want to do that here. This course is concise and meant to be completed quickly and rewatched easily. I don't geek out in details, but keep the material simple for a lay audience and very actionable. Viewers will walk away knowing exactly how to create a diet for post-viral conditions. That is one that is low net carb, high protein, nutrient dense, anti-inflammatory, low glycemic, and high in fiber. It's of course also the diet I try my best to adhere to as much as I can. Beer and pretzels here in Bavaria are hard to ignore. I also didn't create a one-size-fits-all plan. Working with patients for the last decade has taught me that just doesn't work. Indeed, I've created a framework and provided the insights to adjust it to each individual's needs. However, many will still need additional diet nutrition help, and that will be addressed in other courses. With so much diet-related info online these days, I think it's important to teach the basics to help people be well-informed and have realistic expectations. Diets are not cures, they are merely tools. I think the most important thing is helping people understand how food can affect specific symptoms. This wasn't something I understood early on in my illness. Now I realize which specific foods or classes of foods worsen my fatigue, aggravate my gut, etc. That's powerful knowledge to have as we live with our chronic illnesses. It was also made with accessibility in mind. I have a beautiful color handouts for caregivers or partners who do the shopping. The video was edited without any flashing animations or loud music. As someone who has to hear and speak German every day, I understand how exhausting it can be to take in information not in your mother language. From my international friend community here in Munich, I had native speakers assist with subtitling the course in multiple languages: Spanish, French, Italian, Danish, and German. It's not simply AI generated. More languages by request. The videos are also short, 3 to 5 minutes each, so the course can be completed bite-size or easily rewatched. I want it to be rewatched for mastery. A dietary change takes time and trial and error. It will be important to go back through the course and address the troubleshooting areas. You can find a link to the course at the bottom of this post. Health Rising. Also with diet, what about staying away from large meals? Dr. Petrino recently suggested staying away from those. Courtney. Absolutely. The Japanese use the phrase harahachi bonmei, which means eat to 80% full. Eating large meals stresses digestion and requires a lot of cellular energy, ATP. With a long-term high-protein, high-healthy fat diet, the easier this becomes. These foods are more satiating and provide more sustained energy with less quantity. Carbohydrate-heavy diets that are low in fiber are easier to load up on and quick to burn through. This can lead to unstable blood sugar and worsen HPA axis issues seen in ME/CFS. I talk a lot about this in my course. Health Rising. Sleep is such a big issue with ME/CFS. Is there anything you do that helps with sleep? I recently started eating dinner at early in the evening, 5 to 5:30 p.m., and I'm finding that helps. I do need a little snack before bedtime. Courtney, absolutely. An early dinner is a good idea to limit digestive processes too late before bed. It is also a key part of implementing intermittent fasting as a routine. My usual dinner time is also about 5 to 5:30 p.m. I don't usually snack, but if I do, it's something that has tryptophan, like a small spoonful of nut butter. I have tried everything under the sun regarding sleep. It has been one of my greatest struggles since my youth. Prescription hypnotics work very well, but aren't meant to be taken indefinitely. Sedating antidepressants give me terrible restless legs. Supplemental sleep aids, for example, herbs, melatonin, etc., may work, but only for a short time. I found the most effective things for me are the simplest. I try to keep the room cool. I ensure complete darkness by using a good quality eye mask. I use a lavender sleep patch on my wrist. I also like white noise, which seems to keep my wired mind from wandering. Health rising. With regard to Germany, after virtually nothing there for decades, ME/CFS research has really taken off. How is ME/CFS perceived at the physician level, can you say? Courtney, I haven't had good experiences with healthcare here generally. I don't frequently go to doctor appointments, but even the general doctor has been disappointing. Like anywhere else, it's hard to find a good physician who will listen and be empathetic. Here, the patient has to advocate for themselves to get the most basic testing done. Then you don't even get the results. The doctor just says, "We'll call you if anything is abnormal." I don't usually mention my ME/CFS diagnosis when I'm at a doctor, but occasionally it comes up. No doctor I've been to knows what it is. Also, when I talk with German friends and acquaintances, they don't know what it is. Haven't even heard of it.